Welcome to a special episode of the Gulf Coast Life Book Club with legendary Sanibel author Randy Wainwright. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. Our conversation was recorded live at the Players Circle Theater in Fort Myers and hosted by Macintosh Books and Paper in Sanibel. Let's listen.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Thank you all for coming. This is our second event for Randy at the Players Circle Theater, and I want to give them a great big thank you for providing us such a nice venue. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Rebecca Binkowski. I'm the owner of Macintosh Books and Paper. Thank you. We are Sanibel's oldest independent bookstore. We're celebrating our 65th year this year, and that's thanks to all of you, so thank you. Last year's event for One Deadly Eye raised nearly $2,500 for the Fort Myers Beach Public Library, and that's it thanks to Randy. That organization's very near and dear to his heart, and this year, we are going to follow that up by making a donation to WGCU Public Media, which is very near and dear to my heart. So tonight we're honored to host Randy Wainwright. He's the New York Times best-selling author of the beloved Doc Ford mystery series. With 28 novels in that series and 60 published books in all, Randy has become a Florida literary treasure. His books filled with adventure, environmental insight, and unforgettable characters have captivated readers for more than three decades. Beyond his writing, Randy's adventurous spirit as a fishing guide, columnist, traveler, and explorer shines through in every story he tells. In conversation with Randy tonight is Carrie Barber. Yeah, welcome, Carrie. She's producer of WGCU Public Media's Gulf Coast Life Book Club, which I'm sure you all listen to. Carrie has brought countless authors and readers together through her thoughtful interviews and engaging discussions, being a trusted voice in Southwest Florida's literary community. And together, they'll take us behind the scenes of Tomlinson's Wake, excuse me, Randy's latest work. So please join me in welcoming Randy Wainwright and Carrie Barber.
Hello, hello.
I got this cane in Cuba.
All right.
I did, yeah. I'm very involved with Cuba.
All right, well, Randy, welcome. It's so good to see you.
It's great to be seen.
I feel like it was
after the last 3 years.
Yes.
It seems like three or four hurricanes ago, but yeah.
But this, so Tomlinson's Wake.
Yes.
Is what we are here to celebrate. And today's the actual publication date, right?
First date, first book signing, yep.
Woohoo! Hometown crowd.
You should all have first editions.
Yep, yep.
And they probably only printed about 50, so.
Oh.
I don't know.
And this book picks up where One Deadly Eye left off,
yes,
right?
It does, yeah.
Okay.
First of all, I have a question. I was. Fishing guide at Tarpon Bay Marina for almost 14 years. Tarpon Bay on Sanibel has much to do with the books, the characters in the books. Are there any attorneys in the audience? Oh, BS. Don't be ashamed. I love attorneys. Did more than 3,000 charters and adored those years. I was on the water, with rare exception, 300 days a year, out there at First Light catching bait, up late at sunset cleaning fish. And I'm curious, 3,000 charters, all those families, all those decades, any of my former fishing clients here tonight? They never came back, but.
Did they anyway. Go overboard or?
No. No, the most common question asked me during those years as a fishing guide was this: don't you get tired of taking out all of those jerks from the north? And my response was honest. I don't take out jerks. I never did. I came to adore my clients, by and large. Every year at Tarpon Bay, young families would come down to the dock and get in the boat. And then they would come back the next year and the next year and the next year and the next year and with their children. So every year I would get this lovely little postcard of how these families had progressed. And when I talk to fishing guides now, when they complain about their clients, that's a red flag.
And is that before you were writing, or were you going home and writing after your day of charter fishing?
Good question, Carrie. For whatever reason, early on, grew up in rural areas, I fell in love with books. I was not a good student. Any teachers in here? You would not have liked me. Last name White, W, I'm in the back of the room. I didn't answer questions, I didn't pay attention. But for whatever reason, in this two rural towns, one Pioneer, Ohio, which no one's heard of, the other Hamlet, North Carolina, they have these lovely little libraries, and I would go there and I would read books. Even though a poor student, I thought, and I became enamored with the written word, the rhythms, the characters. And in that isolated rural area, which I was just bored as heck, I came to believe, or at least hope, if I could write a book, maybe I could become part of the magic I found in books. Always wanted to write. So when I was a fishing guide, yes, I worked very hard at it. Didn't go to college. Well, as I tell people, I went to high school in Iowa. As a fishing guide, would get up at first light, catch bait, take my clients out to fish, bring them back, clean fish. And then I was just so obsessed, and there is no other word for it, absolutely obsessed with writing. So I would stay up late, and I would get up very early, which is very early for a fishing guide, and I would write. Again, didn't go to college, as I tell people, because I went to high school in Iowa. There is no need to go to college. It only gets laughs from Iowa people. But I worked very, very, very hard at the craft of writing. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about In One Deadly Eye. Mm. Let's see. It's been a while since I read it. But Tomlinson.
It's been a while since I wrote it.
Yeah. Even longer. Tomlinson was not in great shape at the end of it.
Hurricane 2022. I suspect you read about it.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps some of you were homeless afterwards.
Lived it. Yeah.
Many of us were. It was the worst. It was the worst. I'm a lay person historian, and I keep track of these things and have over the decades, hurricanes, red tides. In 2004, my old house at Pineland on Pine Island, it's right across from the Tarpon Lodge, an old Florida house up in an Indian Mound tin roof. It's been there since the very early 1900s. And I was there. It was a direct hit. And I thought there could not be anything worse than that. I was wrong. In 2022, I knew as a lay person, kind of an ignorant historian, frankly, I knew that Sanibel had only been flooded once. That was in 1926. It came close to flooding during the Labor Day hurricane of 1935, but still an anomaly. 2004, Hurricane Charley, my old house in the Indian Mound, built like a rock, but elevated 18 feet above sea level. It flooded, but not my house. But the 2022 hurricane was a whole different story. 2004, that hurricane was like a laser beam. It came streaming across in my old porch. Is there anyone who's not been to my old house at Pine Island? Well, it used to be about 80%. People are dying, apparently. In terms of geography, yes, my house is across the street from the Tarpon Lodge. But in terms of history, the Tarpon Lodge is across the street from my house. And it was bad. It was bad. My friend Michael here helped me rebuild my house. Wonderful guy. He's now in charge of the Calusa Blue Way. wonderful guy and his beautiful wife. And boy, I put Michael to work. Good worker. I sat around and drank beer. But then in 2017, we had a hurricane called Irma. And the governor at that time, 24 hours in advance, said, if you have not left by now, it's too late. Now, I would have ridden out one Category 5 hurricane. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but if the guy says, if you have not left now, it's too late. So my dear wife, Wendy, and I, we loaded up my truck, my boat. We live in Sanibel, off West Gulf, and we drove inland. The eye was supposed to hit us on Sanibel. Remember that? As it has supposed to hit us many, many times before. But anyway, we evacuated to Central Florida. I lease an old defunct gun club east of Punta Gorda, 50 feet above sea level. What could be safer? We did what we were told to do. And so we caravaned out there. It's in my book, One Deadly Eye. And the hurricane turned, and the doggone thing went right over my gun club. The eye went right over, tore off the roof, knocked down trees. It was like the Nazis had bombed the road in. It took us 4 days to get out. And then we couldn't get back onto Sanibel. And we've all been through this. It's a very difficult time, very difficult call. We finally got back on. So Hurricane 2020, to me, the amateur boneheaded historian, assured my wife, the chances of this happening again are next to nil. And so we stayed. And my adored wife, Wendy Webb, could not have been better. She never second-guessed me, never complained, even at the peak of the storm when I said, Wendy, I hate to say this, but if this gets any worse, I might have to tie you to one of the rafters in the house. That's true. It dates back to an actual story with Leon Crumpler, the old captain who ran the ferry from Punta Rasa to Sanibel. And he told me he was there during the hurricane of 1926. And Leon Crumpler loved to tell stories. This is a captain, a fishing guide, so I know I'm not going to believe everything he says. But he said, at the peak of the storm, I had to tie my wife and I to a gumbo limbo tree atop an Indian mound at Punta Rasa. I thought, well, you just storytelling, old fool, but that changed my mind. It was bad. And it went on, as we many of us know, for hours. It just lingered over us like it was just trying to destroy everything. And I told myself that time, Randy, pay attention. Pay attention to everything you see. Make notes. Get the details. Because you will never see this again. And I so hope that's true. But in my book, One Deadly Eye, which I think it's one of my best, but it is, I can't think there's a more authentic account of getting hit by a Class 5 hurricane on a barrier island, because it is detailed and it is accurate. I made a special note of what may be folklore. We're told that animals know in advance. We're told that, are we not? Now, it may be true in the terms of sharks. Moat Marine Laboratory, brilliant laboratory, years ago set out audio beacons throughout Charlotte Harbor and Pine Island. And during one hurricane, they did track sharks going offshore. But I can tell you what, from firsthand visual knowledge, the birds, the wildlife, the gators, the coyotes, they had no clue. And those trees, by the end of that storm, were decorated like Christmas ornaments, with the feathers of egrets and ibis and wading herons. And about the only thing that really seemed to thrive were fire ants. Anyway, so Tomlinson and my unrepentant and hipster's venue of life decided he would evacuate, but he would take a sailboat directly out into the eye of the storm. Now, this is so zen-like. It's also so hippie-like. But he took off and disappeared. And so Tomlinson's wake, Doc Ford, goes in search of his missing friend. And Doc Ford and Tomlinson are both ham radio operators. Are there any ham radio operators in this room? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I will urge you, go get your license. I mean it. I'd got my technical license probably 2 years prior to the hurricane. I got my general license. It's not that, trust me, if I can pass these tests, you can pass these tests. But I had my general ham radio's license, so after the storm, all the radio cell towers were down. There was no communication whatsoever. But with my ham radio, a handheld HT handheld radio, I was able to call in helicopters and have people evacuated the next day. The only communication I'm aware of, and perhaps you've experienced this, if you actually write out a Category 5 hurricane and you're cut off, people who evacuated know far more about what happened than you do. Because we knew nothing other than my interaction with the St. Pete Coast Guard and a few other ham radio operators. So anyway, Tomlinson takes off, he vanishes, and the last transmission he makes was received off Pinar del Rio, Cuba. And I'm a huge fan of Cuba. I've been there many, many, many times. I'm very involved with the Freemasons of Cuba. But Tomlinson's last transmission was picked up off Pinar del Rio, which is in the west of Cuba. So Doc Ford has his last transmission to go on. And the last he's heard is that Tomlinson is shipwrecked off Honduras. And Doc Ford takes off. It was fun.
And he finds him. I don't want to, you know, give too much away.
Oh,
or anything,
give it away.
He finds him in Mesoamerica.
Yeah.
Right. So tell me, I was not familiar with that term. Or can you talk a bit about that? What is the significance of that? Why did you want to write about it? And what does that area cover?
You know, I'm not, as a layperson, I'm not sure what it covers.
Mm.
I'm not sure the experts do, really.
Mm.
I spent much of my life traveling to almost terrible places, particularly Central and South America, Mesoamerica. I was in Nicaragua during the revolution. I was in Guatemala during two revolutions. I was there during the invasion of Panama and very involved with Colombia. I adore Colombia. Many years ago, some friends and I took a pickup truck from Belize up through the Maya Mountains, down into Guatemala at night. And I don't know if you've been to Mesoamerica, Guatemala, those places, but at night, we would drive through these mountains with these hillsides shaped like pyramids. And they were and are pyramids. Simply had not been uncovered. And at night, driving through those mountains, there were firelights, distant hillsides. And another trip, the Bay of Ascension, Mexico, I took a little John boat all back through the backcountry. And we would have to take the John boat and pull it up through the mangroves to get to where we were going. And in the course of being out there in that John boat, I would see these areas, clear water, where they were quarried, perfectly rectangular quarried, or the Maya or the Olmec, had mined stone to build these pyramids. And the glyphs, the carvings, the shapes of certain amulets. The pyramids themselves, East and West pyramids, reminded me so much of Southwest Florida. Have any of you all been to the Randell Research Center on Pine Island? For heaven's sakes, go. You can drive to Pine Island, Pine Land on Pine Island. It's a self-guided walking tour. Remnants of shell pyramids, burial mounds, courtyards, canals, ball playing fields that date back to the time of the Maya and the Olmec, perhaps the Toltec, I'm not sure. But in my old house at Pineland, which is on 60 acres of National Archaeological Preserve, and my history dates back there to 1972, that those wonderful shell mounds and the burial mounds. And if you go there and you walk, stop anywhere and look down, you'll see pieces of pottery. You probably shouldn't pick them up. Probably should not. But just the idea that if you do pick them up, you're the first person to have touched that piece of pottery in between 2,000 and 500 years. It's all on the surface. The East-West Mound, my old house at Pineland, Yosepa, are you familiar with Yosepa Island? If you haven't gone to Yosepa Island, by golly, go to Yosepa Island. Those are East-West Mounds. At Pineland, during various equinoxes, the sun will rise out of a burial mound. This is not accidental. Was there intercourse between these two people? Well, my theory as a layperson, and actually uninformed layperson, is were I a 15, 20-year-old guy living at Pineland, what is now Pineland, or in Cantanaroo, I'd get in a freaking canoe and I'd go somewhere. We travel. We interact. There's a theory that the language of the Clusa is related to the Orinoco River, South America. True or not, I don't know. But the interaction between Southwest Florida and these ancient Mesoamerica associations it's very tough to deny. So I so much enjoyed incorporating that into my book, Tomlinson's Wake. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of Mayans in the book, Mayan culture and so forth. How did you learn about that just by your own travels, or did you do a lot of research on it, kind of book research, or how do you tend to dive into that kind of thing when you're writing about it?
Well, both. Experience is hard to beat. I've never written about any place in any of my books that I hadn't spent extensive time, and that includes Vietnam, Cambodia, Southeast Asia, Malaysia, Cuba, South Africa, other places, but talking to the people. And one of the great resources I have here in South Florida is many of the people who come here to work are Guatemalans. And people don't realize that they are wonderful people, the K'iche' Maya. And when many of them arrive in this state, the children don't speak English, of course. They don't speak Spanish. Did you know that? They still speak K'iche' Maya. So there was a time period, and I've tried to change this, where these kids from Guatemala, also Belize to a degree, Honduras as well, they would come to the States and they would be filtered into these Spanish-speaking schools where they just thought these kids were dumb. They didn't speak Spanish. That's how close the relationship is between Southwest Florida and Mesoamerica. Hmm. Anyway, I really like those folks.
Interesting. So there's an earthquake in this story.
Yep.
What? Tell me. I was really interested that you switched. Natural disasters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why'd you pick an earthquake, and how did the living through Ian affect your writing about another kind of natural disaster?
Well, natural disasters, in my opinion, are only natural disasters when humans are involved. Hmm. You know, hurricanes are apparently a natural phenomenon, I reckon. Hmm. But when we're involved, it becomes a big deal. And in Honduras, Mesoamerica, and I'm unsure the facts are right in the book, I know that. Honduras has about 3,000 to 5,000 earthquakes a year. Mm-hmm. Honduras. It's a daily occurrence. Now, the severity varies. Another aspect to that is 60 million years ago, we're talking about natural calamities here. 60 million years ago in Quintana Roo, which I love. I absolutely love the place. 60 million years ago, a huge meteorite hit there. And it wiped out almost all terrestrial land-based life. You've read about this. It exterminated the dinosaurs worldwide. This one small spot, Quintana Roo. So we have Doc Ford and Tomlinson, whose home has been destroyed by a natural phenomenon. And Tomlinson goes off looking for a new Dinkins Bay Marina, a rebirth, a new place to start. So that was the premise for that. And Tomlinson's just a goofball. Anyway, what a delight to be here, and what a wonderful job, and so good to be back, and hope we didn't go on too long. Thank you.
It's always a delight to hear from you. That was Randy Wayne White, the author most recently of Tomlinson's Wake. Buy the book from Macintosh Books on Sanibel, who hosted this live event. They still have some copies signed by the author. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. We had production help today from Richard Chinqui and Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.